It's time for some Monday morning quarterbacking here on Newstalk 1400 DWS. You can reach us at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line at 351-5357. Or you can email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are the Monday morning quarterbacks, Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Monday morning quarterback session. We do this after every Illinois football game, and we had one the other day, and another victory. Illini 8-point underdog going into that game and beats Western Kentucky. We can talk about that. Also, waiting word about the game at South Florida. I guess they're going to make a decision early in the week. They're waiting to see what the damage is. I know a lot of people down there have lost their power.
Yeah, I know that they're prepared to host it here if South Florida wants to come up. But as it stands right now, they're the host, and they have to make the decision first.
They are, South Florida is 22 in the latest polls, and they are 14-point favorites over, I believe it's, let's see if it's 14 or 12. Not that it makes too much difference. 15-point favorites over the Illini in the polls here this morning. Of course, those are subject to change. And we can talk some tennis. A great weekend and a great couple of weeks for Kevin Anderson. Got to the championship match, got beat by Rafael Nadal, but he did come home with a bunch of money. He was able to get the runner-up spot. Nadal got $3.7 million for winning, and Anderson got $1.8 for runner-up. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I think he'd probably earned 300 and some thousand up to that point this year. $7 million plus, $7.7 for his career. So that's a great start for the season, isn't it? I mean, it's not a start to the season. It's we're past the midway point, but boy, what a take home!
Yeah, that's the end of the four Grand Slams.
Jim, what's the value beyond that? You know, the value to Anderson for future, just because he's so famous now.
I don't know a dollar amount or anything like that, but it'd be worth a lot, I would think. Those guys make a bunch of money on endorsements.
And, I would think, yeah, Nike and all of them will be fighting for him, won't they?
I would think so.
If they haven't already.
I would think so. Then we had volleyball over the weekend, some good matches, some very, very good volleyball being played over at Huff. And the Illini, unfortunately, lost twice. And Stanford, Kevin Hambley's team, beat Illinois once. Then they got beat by Penn State, and that's the second time this year that Penn State has beaten Stanford. And a shout-out to the – I thought we ought to just mention this, because the Parkland Volleyball, again, is the number one team in the nation, and they are 15-0. And they've been playing some teams that were second, third, fourth last year, and beating up on them, so they might win the whole thing again. It's just amazing. And the Cubs have let this division get to be a pretty big horse race right now.
Yeah, game of streaks, isn't it? You just can't figure it out. I thought the Cubs were safe home, and now all of a sudden they're only two games ahead.
Got seven games left with the Cardinals,
yeah,
and four left with Milwaukee.
That's going to decide it, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's not that many games to be played. Aren't we down to 20-something?
Yeah, yeah. Just the rest of this month.
We're at 356-9397. Our Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. Bill, you are first up. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, gentlemen. I watched about the first three or four games of the tennis match, and two things that amazed me is that anybody can return 135 to 136 mile an hour serve. And that thing is just, you can't hardly see it, let alone return it. And the second thing that amazed me, that people would sit there 4 or 5 hours and watch these guys have to towel off after every single point. The girl runs over, she gives them a towel, they wipe down. It was like watching paint dry to me, and it should have been an exciting match. I can remember watching McEnroe and Borg and all those guys. But I couldn't watch it anymore. They're just too much. I got tired of watching them towel off every point.
Well, there's one thing about those Anderson matches. They don't, each point doesn't last long. Mm-hmm. It goes one way or the other pretty quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, sometimes I play 5 hours. This was a very short match.
Yeah.
I seen that one rally went 19 hits or something, and that was, I'm sure that was probably a record for the week. It's like, you ever try to watch men's volleyball?
One play and hit, huh?
Yeah, it's if they return it at all, it's a slam on the other side.
Yeah.
I mean, volleyball is, women, I enjoy watching women play volleyball. Men, not really.
Yeah, they need to raise a net for the men, I think. Jim?
Make the court bigger or something?
Yeah. I mean, just imagine when the game was originally formulated, just think of who the players were and how big they were and how they played and serving underhanded and, barely reached the top of the net.
Speaking of serving underhanded, I was thinking all during the every time Nadal stands back, all the way back to the couldn't you just kind of, we used to, every once in a while, we used to just serve underhanded just to get it over the net. Couldn't you do that once?
I don't know. I'd be interested to see what would happen.
Well, he'd have a long run to get to it.
You bet.
You mentioned the height of the net. Years ago when Chamberlain was off, Will Chamberlain was averaging 50 points a game for a season, they suggested raising the basket to 12 feet, and somebody said, well, that means only Wilt Chamberlain will be able to dunk it. If you want to make it even, we'll lower the basket to 9 feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then let everybody dunk it, huh?
Great game for the Illini. We got some freshmen. Of course, this is this isn't Big Ten competition, but those freshmen end. They already look better than the two seniors last year. I was really disappointed in the season that Phillips and Smoot had last year. They were going to break the Simeon Rice's record. I don't think Smoot had a sack until like the eighth game.
Well, I don't know, but Smoot had put a lot of pressure on him. You notice he's made it in the NFL, so
yeah, they liked him.
The thing about the defensive ends is, and this won't be decided until later, when we play Iowa, they're going to send Watley behind a bunch of, by the way, Watley is really good, like really, really good. He saved Iowa's bacon against Iowa State Saturday. And they're going to run at those guys now, and this isn't about getting sacks. This is about defending your area when they run right at you with a lot of blockers.
Yeah,
that's what's going to happen. Now, can they hold up? I don't know. That'll be the deciding factor.
About 2 years when they put on 30, 40 pounds, they could be really exciting to watch.
Oh, yeah. I think Roundtree's going to be very good, and Gay's terrific for his size. But, the advantage of being smaller is that you're quicker. Mm-hmm. And then later on, when you're playing Wisconsin and Iowa, does that matter?
Not if you have 300-pound offensive tackles that can run.
Yeah, well, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
Especially if you play Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Bill. Let's go to Rick. Hello, Rick.
Yes. Hi, Jim and Lauren. It was fun watching the match yesterday of tennis, and afterwards at the presentation of the trophies, our guy, it was really neat to hear him mention Illinois, I think at least two or three times.
Yeah, and he mentioned the fact that Brad Dancer was there following him, too.
Yes, and he mentioned his teammates here, and I thought that was really nice and a nice shot for Illinois. It kind of reminds me of Simeon Rice and what a wonderful player he was here and in the pros, just a great player and I'm sure a very nice guy. But I remember when he played in the Super Bowl and they had close-ups of the players, each of them as they were coming on the field before the game, and each of them yelled out their school, University of Notre Dame, and so forth and so on. And they got to him and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. And he says, Simeon Rice, School of Hard Knocks.
I thought, who was it said the school of Chief Alanowick? Who said that, Jim? Was that?
I don't recall.
One of the big linemen.
Who that was. But I was all prepped for him to shout out proudly, University of Illinois, and I'm pretty sure it's what he said was School of Hard Knocks.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's okay. It doesn't matter.
The way it is. Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate the call. Dave Lone said the men's net is 8 feet and the women's net is 7'4". Well, 8 feet isn't high enough.
I can jump 8 feet.
You know, they've got guys, virtually everybody, they'll have maybe one little guy in there, normal size, 6 feet or something. All the rest of those guys are 6'8".
Well, how'd you like that 6'8" gal that Stanford had?
Well, if she ever learns to play in the back row, that'll be she'll be dynamite. But I always say, come on, we got to get this rotation out and get her out of the game. Yeah, they got 1'6'8" and 1'6'6" at front line. Stanford's a very good team, but Kevin's in a spot there. This is a national championship team, and several of them. I don't know which ones. I don't follow it that closely, but a number of them are back from that team, and then of course their coach retired, and Kevin took the job.
I know he's got to win, doesn't he?
But they didn't. Didn't he cry him losing to Penn State? But he's done it twice here in about 2 weeks' time. Season just started. And the Illinois, the team, they're playing this weekend down at Springfield, Missouri. They're playing Chattanooga, Tennessee State, and Missouri State. And then they open the Big Ten season, 4 road games in a row. So ooh, that's the next 7 matches. Are on the road that play Indiana, Northwestern, Penn State, and Rutgers. So Dave Deal, we're told, was the man
Dave Deal, right,
that said the University of Chief Alanowick. Good for him. 9:17, we take our first break here, Mr. Bond. Coming right back, phone lines open at 356-9397. Our text line is 351-5357. And just because we won doesn't mean you can't call and talk about the football game. Normally, they call.
There were some shortcomings in the game. They only scored one offensive touchdown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think we determined that, and somebody can question me on this, but we determined that Western Kentucky isn't near the team they were under Brohm. Brohm's a heck of a coach, and he can coach an offense. And, of course, they lost their 2 great receivers and a great running back. And 3 outstanding all-conference linemen offensively. So this wasn't the same team. And you know what? The Vegas odds should have taken that into account. They were based strictly on last year. This isn't last year. This is a different Western Kentucky team. They don't recruit year after year after year at a successful rate that maybe, you know, the Ohio States and Michigans do. I mean, when they have good players, they have successful teams, and then they lose those players and they have to start over. And I think what we're seeing is Western Kentucky starting over, don't you?
Well, we'll follow them the rest of the year, as we always do, Illinois opponents. We'll see. Ball State, I think, won their game, didn't they? They played UAB or somebody on the on Saturday. They were ahead in that game. Let's take a break here, Ed, then we'll go back to the phone calls at the 9:18. It's 65 degrees. We're back in our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. John is next. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great. How about you, man?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. I was at the game Saturday night. I've been to both games. I have season tickets. The crowd was much more responsive, I thought, on Saturday night. It was a lot of fun. Part of that could be because it was a late game and the crowd was a little more well-oiled, perhaps.
That's part of it.
And there were more students there, and the back and forth between the student section and the crowd was wonderful. The defense, I was really impressed with them. I was surprised when I read on Sunday morning that they didn't convert any first or third downs in the whole first half. But the other thing I wanted to mention is my sister lives in Tampa, and she sent me a text this morning, and she says that They're safe, and they have power already.
So, oh, okay. So that sounds like the football game would be played down there then, wouldn't it?
Well, I would think that that would be an indication that things didn't get as bad as they feared and that they'll be able to have that game in Tampa on Friday night.
Yeah, that storm got diminished quite a bit once it hit land, and it wasn't quite the devastation that they had down the islands, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's already, the eye of the storm is already up near the Georgia line. I think maybe it moved faster than they thought and diminished and so on. So I think it's looking better for a Saturday night game. But the other thing,
I think we're supposed to play them on Friday, aren't we?
Friday night, yeah.
Yeah, Friday night. I didn't miss the war chant. I don't think the crowd missed the war chant. As long as Illinois is playing well, they're, I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. And I guess I'm one of the people in the minority who was not surprised to see that go. And because my wife and I grew up remembering Powwow the Indian Boy, and I would say to her, that sounds like Powwow the Indian Boy, which...
really?
You're right about that.
You know, Tom Kasich confirmed that in his column in the newspaper a little bit while back, and I thought, you know, that's really kind of a dreadful thing. And I know that I'm in the minority for Illinois alumni around here, but that's what I thought. So I'm one person who's not sad, I'm not sad to see it go, to tell you the truth. I don't know what we'll replace it with. And quite frankly, I don't think it'll make much difference as long as they keep playing the way they did on Friday or Saturday night.
You know, when you mentioned that everybody was having such a good time, the people in the crowd and the band and the students and all that.
Yes.
One reason was we were winning.
You think?
That makes people, gives them a little better,
that said,
a little better
however,
attitude.
I looked into the east upper deck, and half of those people were gone by the third quarter.
Yeah, I don't know why they left. It was a great game, but...
Well, I don't know why people come, but they're going to leave. I mean, but I know people that left, and they just were bored by the first half. I don't know why, but...
It was exciting.
You know, I don't know.
But in that first game, the band would do ILL, and the rest of the fans would just sit on their hands. I'm thinking, you may as well be sitting at home watching it on TV if you're not going to come and have a good time.
I think a lot of people figured that out and went home and watched it on TV, it looked like.
Yeah.
I was stunned by the number of people that left, but I don't know. I guess maybe it's the competition. Maybe it doesn't mean anything to people to beat Western Kentucky. I mean, I don't know what else, how else to explain it.
Well, I was part of the Black Eye from 1971 to 75, and I still enjoy going to the games, and it was just a lot of fun being there and having the crowd responsive to the students and so on. It's a great time if people want to go there and do that.
Yeah, appreciate your call. Thanks so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
I think that war chant all had to, not so much the war chant itself, but the concern about the 3-1 and reviving the memory of the chief. I think that's what that uproar was all about.
Well, Michael Kaiser here did an interview with Barry Houser, in which Howard said that not all band members supported the war chant. In his first extended interview, since it was made public 2 weeks ago that the war chant would not be played, the director of the Marching Illini is weighing in. Barry Houser said that while he supports the decision, he understands why people were upset and angry. He said it was a collaborative decision that consisted of ongoing conversations with the administration for many years. He said even before he started at the University of Illinois in 2011, there had been discussions on whether the war chant should continue or not. Houser said you have to look at how the music was making some students feel on campus, no matter if one student or 1,000 who might be offended by the chant. Houser said that there has been a misconception that all members of the Marching Illini supported the war chant. He said there have been some band members who did not support it and were uncomfortable with the music. And Bill responds to that. He says, so Hauser thinks it's best to give to the snowflakes. Is this a university or a nursery school? Kids are being taught to be offended by almost everything, even if it doesn't apply to them. They are told this makes them enlightened and superior. How did giving in to radicals work at Missouri? And we go to Sharon. Hello, Sharon.
Good morning. I wanted to say we were at the game, and I enjoyed it, but we got cold.
Okay.
And we don't particularly like night games.
Okay. I noticed when I came down, it was pretty chilly. I thought, this is the last time I'm wearing a short-sleeve shirt to a game.
Yeah, well, we had sweatshirts and all that. Could have brought a blanket in, but when we went in, it was quite warm,
mm-hmm.
And it cooled off, and we're old enough that it's getting more difficult. But we enjoyed the game.
Sure, and you know when that sun goes down, it gets colder?
I know that. But I still like daytime games better than nighttime.
Yeah, I understand.
Appreciate
your call. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
And Alan is next. Hello, Alan.
Yeah, I was going to say pretty much the same thing. I went to the game, and I debated to wear shorts or blue jeans. I ended up wearing blue jeans and a windbreaker, and it got pretty darn cool. And I also noticed that after the band played, a lot of people left. And I said, where are you guys going? We got a good game going here. He said, well, we kind of came for the band, plus it's getting cold. And that first half just took forever. I mean, it was a 2-hour
The last
half.
Last 1:21, that's when it started. When the penalty, when Illinois scored, and you had the penalty on the snapper down there, the 15-yard penalty to put the kickoff back. From that point on, it was just one penalty after another, one thing after another. And I don't know how long that 1:21 took, but it must have been at least 30 minutes.
Well, it was close to that. I think it was 20-some minutes.
Was it? I didn't know, but it just seemed like it.
That's what people were saying on the air, but I don't know.
Every time I looked up, it just kept still over a minute.
I know it.
It was 1:16. It was 1:05. I thought, man.
And then all we had to do was take a knee,
yes.
And the clock would have run out, and we get a penalty, and they stop the clock. There's still 28 seconds to go. For them, you know, we had to punt it. Oh man, it was crazy.
It was a lousy ending to the first half, but that was a lot of it. It was getting pretty late, and the wind picked up, and it got pretty chilly.
Well, I can tell you it was different. I went over to the tailgate at 4:15.
Right,
and I walked out of that stadium at 11 o'clock at night with a pretty long walk to my car. It was different at 11 p.m. than it was at 4:15, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. I like the way our defense came together. It gives you somewhat of hope for the future.
Yeah.
Our offense has got quite a ways to go, although the drive at the start of the second half was very key, and I thought it might be, and we went all the way, and I thought, well, maybe we got a chance now.
Yeah, hit Dudek three times in that drive. That was good to see.
Yep,
in that drive right after the halftime and took it in. And by the way, Chase Krause made a couple of nice runs.
Yes, he did.
And that made the difference.
Including the touchdown run.
Yes, sir.
Hey, appreciate the call. Thanks very much. We have several callers waiting. If you wouldn't mind to hold on, it is 9:30, and Brian Barnard has the news headlines. We'll come back after that with more of our Monday morning quarterbacking. We're back on our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate taking your calls at 356-9397 or text us at 351-5357. And let's go to Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hey, good morning, guys. A couple of things I wanted to add. On Friday, I was free, so I went over to West Lafayette to the Purdue game.
Oh, boy.
And, you could tell that's where Western Kentucky's coach went to.
You
that
bet.
That looked significantly improved from, obviously, the week before they gave Louisville a good run, and then they tore Ohio apart, on especially the first half in that game. So, but I noticed that Ross-Ade Stadium was their first night game with permanent lights, which was interesting, but they sell beer at their games, which I thought was kind of odd because Illinois.
Well, Purdue and Ohio State took it up this year.
Yeah, and the beer lines were tremendously long, so it seems to be a no brainer that I don't even know why that wasn't done, 30 years ago. But guys might have more insight.
They're considering it at Illinois, but I don't know if how long it'll take. But it will be done at some point. You can count on.
Yeah, it's money lost at this point, is all it is. So,
well, and you got the great argument that people upstairs can have any kind of booze they want, and the people downstairs can't. So that's just not fair.
Doesn't make much sense. But the other thing, Ohio State. Now, I saw, if you watched the Indiana game in the first half, you saw this coming. That offense has got, there's something not quite right there. I mean, Barrett, if you force him to throw, I think you're in good shape because they got a great running game. If they would use it, if they would stick to it. But, as just a pure pocket thrower, he's not the guy. He can run the ball, and they can, Dobbins is a great back and all that, but the Indiana game was a real indicator that something's not quite right with that particular team this year, I think. I don't know what you guys thought of that. Perhaps.
Well, of course, you got your expectations as for them to be number one in the country, so that is and you're right. The guy is, Barrett's been the captain of that team 3 years, and they really believe in him, but I think you're right that he's just not a big-time passer.
Right.
And maybe maybe the receivers are not quite at Ohio State level either.
Mm-hmm.
That was another concern.
It was a good game, though, the Oklahoma game. I actually enjoyed watching that game. But the third comment I wanted to make was I'm really not too pleased with the way that they're doing the TV scheduling now. Remember when the big game used to be 2:30 in the afternoon, if I remember correctly. Now they've got four games all slotted up at the same time on Saturday night where you really have to pick and choose, be flipping between them to be able to catch any of the same games, like ESPN's got one, Fox has got one, ABC has got one. So it's much more difficult to find that one big game anymore on TV.
Well, when you got three TV organizations all striving to put the best game out there in the evening and in prime time, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah.
I mean, Fox is now a player in this thing. Fox wasn't a player a few years ago.
Right. I got you. But anyway, that was just some observation from this weekend, and thanks a lot for doing the show, Guy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate your call, sir. And Jared is next. Come on, Jared.
Yeah, I just wanted to congratulate Lovie Smith on the win. And very appreciative of the game they put on, and great job the band did. On Saturday, I brought my wife, my 94-year-old aunt, and my 3-year-old daughter, and it was my aunt and daughter's first Illini game, and wanted to pass along some congratulations. A good show. Everybody enjoyed it. It was a great experience.
You better bring them back again. I remember those are good luck charms.
Anything will help this year. And, we'll take it.
Exactly right. Well, I'm glad you had a good time, and glad you got a win for all your friends and relatives there. We're at 356-9397. The guest at the Esquire tonight, the sports writers are back at the Esquire, is David Williams. He is Illinois' all-time leader in receiving yards.
Yep, under Mike White.
And the Lovie Smith Show is at 7 o'clock as well. So a lot of football. And a text question. There were two flags thrown for sideline interference, and it appeared Lovie was very upset on the calls. Can you clarify?
I wish I could. Do you know anything more about it, Jim?
No.
I don't either. We asked Lovie after the game, of course, at the press conference. I got no, it's something we have to not let happen again. That was the kind of answer. I don't know what happened. I do not know who specifically bumped the official.
It's quite likely it was somebody other than Lovie.
I don't know. I just don't know.
Evidently, did they got a warning before? Well, this wasn't the first time it had happened, I don't think. It happened in another game, too. Did it happen in the Ball State game?
I'm not aware that it happened.
We got a sideline warning in a Ball State game,
okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, that could be, Jim. I don't know. I just don't know what happened because he didn't explain it, and then, of course, we just forgot about it after that, I guess.
You know, guys get excited, and they're coaching up the kids out on the field, and, maybe the guy didn't hear you, and you kind of – I don't think they're running way out on the field or anything.
No, and the problem is that the official that's running by, he's looking the other direction.
I know, and if he
hits, he doesn't see you.
Yeah, happened in basketball.
So you got to stay out of their way.
happens to basketball, too.
Yeah.
Those basketball coaches go wherever they want to go. All the way up to one end, all the way back, out onto the court. So, you were talking during the break there about the targeting. You want to explain that a little bit, what happened?
Well, I can't. I mean, it wasn't... it wasn't an intense,
not necessarily the foul, but the aftermath of the fact that he can play.
Yeah, he can play in the next game. He has to set out a half, and he set out the second half of that game because it happened right before halftime. And I think Jay Layman mentioned to me as he ran by at halftime, he said, "You know, this is a tough call, but from our standpoint, it happened at the perfect time because he's only going to miss a half of the game. If it happened at the beginning of the game, then he'd miss the rest of that half and all the second half. As it happens in this case, he only basically missed the second half. But it was a play where, the guys kind of got twisted sideways a little bit and their heads bumped. And I don't know why it's always the defensive guy that has to – sometimes it's the offensive guy that causes it. You come in low for a tackle, let's say, and the guy ducks his head.
Ducks, yeah.
And what are you going to do? I mean, it's too late.
Well, let's see. It's the concussion thing that's causing all the problems.
Absolutely. And they're trying to do everything possible, and everybody's trying to play on the safe side by eliminating players who unfairly are sent to the sideline, as it was the case with Watson.
John Cass and others said it's going to be the end of football.
What do you think?
Well, I don't think so.
In your old hometown of Springfield, they've lost a lot of players at the junior level. I've just got a report on that last week, and, I mean, it's way down. I'm talking about the juniors now, not the high schools, below the high schools. Well, when that starts to happen, what does that mean as you work your way up?
Mom and Dad said you're not going out for football to the little guys. I don't know what the situation is here in Champaign-Urbana, whether they are little leagues so-called, are down or not.
You know, at Monticello, I think they got 57 football players. That's a pretty good number at the varsity level.
Yeah.
Now, I think that it varies from school to school. St. Thomas More was just killed by Monticello, you know, Friday night.
Right.
And I asked a person who was at the game, how many players did St. Thomas More had? And he said 21. He said 11 on the field, 10 on the sideline. I don't know if that's accurate. That's just what a guy told me. But, Jim, you can't play football at a high school with 21 players now, or 24, or whatever the number might be. I heard earlier that they had 24. But what's going to happen to the parochial schools where you've got a lot of middle to upper class kids, because the parents got enough money to be able to afford it, so we know they're coming from pretty good families, when they start, when the families stop allowing their kids to play football at the junior level, and the next thing you know, the parochial schools are going to have real trouble, at least some of them. I think Slarman and St. Thomas More both have got problems in numbers.
And the Monticello has what, 56?
Well, I think that was a number I heard. I mean, at least they've got a real going program over there under Corey, under Welter, the coach, and he's really good. And Jim, when you're winning, it makes a difference.
Yep, St. Joe's probably got a lot of people. Unity has probably got a lot of people.
Yeah.
Right at 356-9397. This is September, and September is among the most popular months to get married. Before you walk down the aisle, Busey suggests setting a solid financial footing. Their experts suggest the following tips for financial intimacy. Will you and your spouse-to-be, finances be separate or combined? Consider individual spending and their saving habits, and making the decision together will help you find a system that works. Couples that tackle money problems together and take responsibility for solving them will find that their relationship is better for it. Share credit. Let your spouse-to-be know your credit situation and vice versa. Marrying a person with bad credit will not drag down the score, but the credit will be factored in when applying for joint financing. Knowing ahead of time will help you plan strategically. and Sweet Savings. Decide how much you want to save as a couple and withdraw the funds automatically from your paychecks. Be realistic when budgeting your monthly savings goal and use Busey's eBank for your online banking needs or utilize their free budgeting too. No matter your stage in life, Busey will be there along the way. Visit Busey.com or stop by one of their convenient locations for solutions to your personal business and wealth management needs. We're at 356-9397. You can text us at 351-5357. And let's see. Good morning. My family has season tickets in the Horseshoe. We've had these seats for over 10 years. It is our family time. I want to know why it continues to be a problem for us to secure our purchased handicap seats. Gate guards are not helping and arguing with us over our purchased seats. Also, when are they going to update the bathrooms? The men's room shut down with toilet water outside on the floor. Last year it was a women's, toilet. And only cold water to wash your hands or clean up children. Lots of money for updates to the stadium, but not decent restrooms. Thanks.
Well, I think that we saw what happened with the decision to change the Horseshoe. We thought they would start work on the Horseshoe after this season. But now that's all been changed because they're going to build a building out there for the lockers and everything and out on the east side.
Yeah, next to the indoor stadium.
Right. So the work on the east and the Horseshoe has been delayed again.
Right, 356-9397.
It's all about recruiting. It's all about building a nice place so that recruits will be impressed because I just noticed that Purdue is doing that so that they'll get more recruits, and Indiana has just put $60 million into their south end so they'll get more recruits, and Illinois is doing the same thing so we'll get more recruits. Now, who's going to win that recruiting battle? I got news for you. It'll be Ohio State and Michigan.
Well, and just remember with all those improvements they've made at the stadium, we'll play like maybe six games in there.
Yeah, six or seven.
Even the high school moves out once every 2 years now. Okay, South Florida, 15-point favorite over Illinois. Michigan is 27.5 over the Air Force. Penn State, 38 over Georgia State. Boy, Penn State looks really good. They look like a really good football team. Iowa State. These things are so small, they're hard to make out. At Minnesota, Minnesota's 10.5 over Middle Tennessee. Indiana's a 21.5-point favorite over FIU. Duke is 12 over Baylor. And didn't Duke destroy Northwestern?
Duke looked good, didn't they?
Ooh.
Weren't those receivers quick?
Mm.
They'd catch the ball, and Northwestern couldn't tackle them.
Mm. Wisconsin, 14. They play at the BYU. They're the 14-point favorite there.
Let me tell you something about Wisconsin. People say, well, yeah, they look okay, you know, because they're not flashy. They just beat you up. In the last two seasons, they've played, and two more games this year, they've played, 13, 14, 20, nearly 30 games over two-plus seasons, nearly 30 games. In only four of those games has the opponent scored more than 20 points. And two of those were Ohio State. They just stopped me. I mean, it's hard to win when you're scoring 6, 10, 12, 15 points. It's hard to win. That's why Wisconsin wins. They hold you down. And plus they hold the ball, which holds the score down.
Keeps your defense, even if it's good at the beginning of the game, they wear them down.
Yeah.
Let's see. Iowa is 22 over North Texas. Northwestern 22 over Bowling Green, and Ohio State is 30.5 over Army. Wouldn't want to be on that Army team after Ohio State just got beat that bad. They're likely to come out smoking this weekend. Let's see. From Bill, at the first game, instead of the drumline bringing the team out with the war chant drum music, followed by Oskiwawa, The band lined up and the scoreboard played a Led Zeppelin song to fire up the crowd. After the song ended, 4 minutes of dead silence. The Led Zeppelin song they played was the politically correct song, The Immigrant Song. I had a good laugh at the irony. They played The Immigrant Song. I don't know that I know that song.
I don't know either.
9:54, Mr. Bond, let's take a break here at 66 degrees at the Radio Center. Back to the phones we go on our Monday morning quarterback session with J.D. Hello, J.D.
Good morning, guys. Good show as usual.
Thank you.
I find it interesting that the numbers are down. As you used an example at St. Thomas More, I hear a lot of parents say that they don't want their sons playing football because it's so dangerous. I'd like to give you an example of why they say I'd rather have them play soccer because it's not as rough and dangerous. My grandson played at a very high level at a high school in Akron, Ohio. They played Cleveland schools. And it's his 3 years on the varsity. He had two concussions, and he broke another player's jaw when he went up to head the ball and hit the kid's jaw and broke it. So all this talk about how safe, you know, I'd rather have my son play soccer because it's not as rough, that's not true. Ask any soccer parent or any kid who plays soccer, they continually have headaches from heading the ball. So I'm not sold on that fact that let's have them do something like soccer instead of football. And as far as numbers goes, it's interesting to note that throughout the South, football participation is up dramatically. Now, that could be because of Alabama and things like that.
At what level is it up? Are you talking about junior or high school or what?
At high school level.
Okay.
Alabama's had a huge increase. On the other side of it, Vermont, they're having trouble fielding teams because people just aren't interested in it.
Yeah.
So I don't know where you go. I think one thing they need to do is make sure that they've got these junior coaches coaching the right way, doing the right things, not being amateur Vince Lombardis, but doing things the right way, and that might also help with the safety of football.
I appreciate your call. Thanks very much. Speaking of soccer, I've had two granddaughters that have played here recently and others that have played before, and it seemed like they had a lot of knee injuries as well in soccer. You know,
that's understandable.
Yeah, they're running all the time. Second hour coming up on DWS in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to hour number two of our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We're at 356-9397. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. There's a picture here of the young lady that won the U.S. Open women's tournament. She was being interviewed by the three people after she was sitting there, and they said, "Well, what are your plans now?" And she had the check in her hand. She held up the check and started waving around. She said, "Are you kidding? Do you know how much money they gave me?"
But, you know, both the, if you were going to be fair about it, both of the finals were kind of blowouts.
Oh, they were.
I mean, Stevens.
Hers was even more.
Stevens was just dominant. I thought Keys had a shot in that. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that she was going to dominate. And, you know, the way she came back and beat Venus.
Yeah, she didn't give her a game in that last set. I believe it was 6-3, 6-0. And let's see what Jeff Brom has to say about the Purdue Boilermakers. "I want our guys to have fun and enjoy the experience. The more fun they have, the harder they'll play. The turnout was more than impressive. I was in awe. The fans showed up and were into the game, and our players responded."
There's certain advantages, not altogether, you know, but there's certain advantages to having a really good offensive mind running the football team. And some of our best successes here were when Makovic And, of course, Mike White were calling the plays. They were the offensive gurus, and they called the plays. The thing that took Tepper down was the fact that once he lost Landry, he lost that ability to, you know, to really put together a good, particularly a good passing offense. And I think that what you've got over at Purdue now is a new coach who is going to run. He's a total responsible guy now. He's calling the plays. He's on top of the offense. And you still have to play good defense, but, boy, it's nice to have that offensive guy in charge.
And, of course, Lovie is a defensive guy.
Lovie's a defensive guy, and Garrett McGee is a head coach of half that team. I mean, you can kind of tell from the quotes and the things that are said and the fact that he's calling plays that that's what's going on offensively.
And let's see. Here is a note from South Florida's AD.
Okay.
Mark Harlan retweeted something that somebody else had sent in. Too early. We'll see how Tampa looks today. Sure, we can get our practices and work in with our partners, the ACC, the Illini. We will let all know as soon as possible. That's about all he can do, I'm sure.
They'll have to make a decision by tomorrow, though, one way or the other.
Yeah, since it's a Friday game, what do you do, just trade airplane for?
Yeah, they would do that, yes. Mm-hmm. They'd have the same airplane that Illinois would have going down there probably, but the other thing is, you know, you have to have time to, if Illinois is going to host that game, just imagine the job it's going to be trying to organize and sell tickets for the game with just 3 days. It'd be tough.
Yeah, I wonder how that would work. People with the season tickets would get the same seats.
You got me. I've never had one like this. I would think the answer to that would be yes, but
well, we'll get the answers if indeed that happens. It's.
I think South Florida is going to do everything they can to play it there.
Well, I bet they are. Sure. And we got that call this morning where somebody lives in Tampa and still has power.
What's their attendance going to be like? How many people will go to the football game on Friday night in Tampa? That's another question.
Yeah, we don't know what
some of those people are gone.
Well, we don't know what the damage has been or
that's
anything
right.
else. Here's an entirely different topic. This is Jay Billis, who is never one to hold back on what he has to say, his opinion. Depending upon who you listen to, there is a perpetual crisis in college basketball, and one that is worsening by the day. According to the doomsday predictors, there is an epidemic of transfers in this culture of immediate gratification, entitlement, selfishness, and turning tail from adversity and personal growth. In other words, these spoiled, entitled, and needlessly empowered players don't want to stick it out when they momentarily are unhappy in the school they've chosen, and they renege on a solemn commitment to leave their highly paid coaches and administrators in the lurch while they selfishly seek out something better for themselves. Step back from this ridiculous rhetoric and the transfer debate and go to the very foundation upon which this entire industry is said to be built. What does the NCAA president Mark Emmert say every time the thought of student compensation is broached? He says simply, "These are students." And then he goes on to say, "There's one way to solve this," says Jay Billis, "and that is let them do it.
Let everybody transfer anytime they want, right?"
Wow.
Hey, you could be playing in December for one team and then transfer over in January and play for the other team against your team.
Baylor Scott Drew told ESPN, "It would be the worst rule ever. It would be the wild, wild west. Coaches don't agree on everything. On this, I think we'd be unanimous."
Yeah.
"The game will not suffer if athletes are immediately eligible any more than it suffered from graduate students, which is zero. The doomsday predictions are based upon the views of coaches and administrators who are self-interested and ignore their own rhetoric and principle." This is Billis talking again now. "Players don't choose a school out of college with the intention of leaving, and they transfer for a myriad of reasons. Not all about an entitled player getting more shots or being featured as an NBA prospect or having too many people This is not an epidemic either. There are 351 Division I schools. We're going to have transfers due to scholarship limits. There are not sufficient spots available for transfers to be an epidemic. Poaching is not a legitimate concern, as you cannot poach an unpaid amateur non-employee student. But if the NCAA wishes to have unenforceable ethics rules for coaches, go ahead, knock yourself out.
Well, I will tell you that you will not have one commissioner or one coach support the idea of unlimited transfers, and I think it's hard. It's going to be very hard to pass something when you have unanimous against it in terms of the coaches and commissioners. Don't you think? I mean,
it's not the sports writers or the sportscasters going to make the decision.
No.
Let's go to Lloyd. Hello, Lloyd.
Yeah, I was at the volleyball game the other night, and I've been to several volleyball games where they had the stuff up and the regionals, whatever, and by far, I think that was the biggest crowd ever. I mean, people were standing in the corners behind the concession stands and everything. I don't know where they came up with 4,000 and some, and that might be the sellout for tickets, but that crowd was huge the other night, on Friday night.
You know, it was a huge crowd, but I will say this. It is really unfortunate that so many people have blocked views from up above. So I was up there, and I had a pretty good view, but people to my left and my right are sitting behind, poles.
You're
big poles, which has been there forever. And here's the other part. On the one side, you've got all the media on the top row of A, so that everybody's sitting directly behind. You can't sit in the top, in the bottom rows of the upper deck. You can't see anything.
No,
and it's the same thing on the other side.
No, they ruined the seating after
they ruined the seating when they built the building. Because, Jim, it was that way for basketball years ago, remember?
You're absolutely right, though. And there is some terrible seats up there, but that was a heck of a volleyball game. But that crowd was incredible as far as the numbers.
Yeah,
the football players were all there, and they stayed for a long time. And
they stayed for the whole thing.
Yeah, it was very, very impressive. And we were fortunate; we were in the balcony about not quite halfway, unlike row three or four. I can't remember the exact number. But
what did you think of the volleyball team?
When I moved up, it was quite hot. It was pretty hot up there, wasn't it?
I was okay hot wise, but what did you think of the team?
I was a little bit disappointed in our defensive specialist in the back row there for a while, but I thought Stanford, their serves were just tremendous, I thought. So,
low
and everything, their trajectory was pretty good. But I thought we played well. I was impressed. I really was.
Yeah, I talked to Kevin Hambly a little bit after the game, and he said these two teams are going to have to learn to play defense. He said we both hit 400. So it was sort of the same on both sides.
Right. And I thought there was a good student turnout, too, also. So.
Yeah, did you go back for the Colorado game?
No, I did not. I heard it was a tough loss, though.
Yeah, that was a busy day, but I went to that. The crowd was nothing like the one the night before, of course, but it was a pretty good turnout, considering there was a game that night.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder how many people stayed around at 5:30 and watched
football game.
No, watched our the big game of the whole thing was Penn State and Stanford.
And Penn State won again.
Yep, they did.
So
Hanley has got two losses already, and I don't know how violent are these followers of Stanford volleyball are out there. Maybe they're out doing other things. Who knows? But they don't take kindly to losing, that's for sure.
There was in the parking lot on Friday, there was a large contingent of Penn State fans tailgating for the volleyball game.
Oh, yeah. They follow
football tradition.
The football tradition is amazing at Penn State.
Right. Ben, I just want to comment on that, but like you're exactly right, Lauren. You sit behind one of those poles.
It isn't just the poles. It's also the people in front of you.
Press.
You can't see. You can see around. You can see portions of the floor, but you can't see all of it.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. Appreciate the call.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're doing the best they can.
Yeah.
They got media they're going to need to take care of. They
yep.
got, if they're going to have sell that many tickets, there are going to be some people that don't have good views. And that's part of the way it is in a lot of parks when they completely sell them out. Somebody's behind a pole, maybe. I don't know if it's like that at Wrigley or not, but that's an old ballpark. It's a 10:23. I do know that. It's 67 degrees, Mr. Bond. Let's take a quick break. We're coming right back. And we have two or three texts here. Let me go over those. Jim and Lauren on the news, Barry Houser said there has been a consistent message on the 3-1, and there is no need to worry about it going away. Wasn't there a consistent message regarding the war chant until just a few weeks ago?
No, there was no discussion of it at all. Mm-hmm. There was no consistent message on the war chant. Jim, did you ever hear it brought up?
No.
Did you even know what it was?
I never heard it. I never heard, I knew the when they played, and I knew the people were clapping their hands and all that stuff, but I never heard it called the war chant until last week.
And you never heard about it would or wouldn't be done away with?
No.
I never did either. I never heard one way or the other. I didn't know it was in conversation.
I didn't even know it was called the war chant. Never heard that term. Elizabeth says Tiller was offensive minded and Purdue was very good.
Yeah,
I think Elizabeth. Let's see, offensive and Purdue was very good. Well, that's right. I thought.
I mentioned
when you were talking about the Tepper on
Tepper
on
was
defense.
A defensive coach under Makovic and became the head coach and hired Landry as his assistant and in charge of the offense. And the offense wasn't bad for a couple of years until Landry left. You know, he went down to Louisville to recruit. We thought to recruit Redmond, and Redmond committed to Illinois. And the next thing you know, he was trying to get the head job and trying to talk Redmond into coming to Louisville with him, and he didn't get the head job, but Redmond wound up in Louisville instead of Illinois. So, big turnaround there because he was a fine quarterback.
Landry got the worst end of the whole deal, didn't he?
Well, he wound up getting fired.
That's what I mean.
And probably justifiably so. As much as I like Landry, you know, he was working on Illinois' dime, but he was trying to get the other job in Louisville when he was supposed to be down there recruiting Redmond.
Easy call on that one, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it was.
And Kevin says, my feeling is that many kids who start playing football in the fourth grade are totally burnt out on the sport by the time they're freshmen in high school. These are run with untrained coaches and unregulated leagues. Plus, studies have shown that the continued head hits are what causes the brain injuries, not the one-time big hit. I did see some numbers on that.
I think it's probably accurate.
Particularly with regard to linemen who get banged like that almost every play.
I think there's a difference. I mean, this is dangerous territory for me, but I think if I do a header in soccer and get a concussion out of it, that's one thing. But to have your head completely, you know, head bang, 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 bang repeatedly as a lineman, let's say, or as a linebacker, you're going in and making a lot of tackles, I think that probably has more serious damage.
Or even if you never make a tackle, they're banging together on every play.
Yeah.
Didn't we learn to play football in a back lot somewhere, no pads, no helmets, but serious tackling allowed? I would like to see the IHSA somehow ban all football leagues before high school. I'm not sure how they could do this. One idea is not to allow these junior football leagues to use the fields and facilities of the public schools or other IHSA schools. Does anyone know if the IHSA has ever or is addressing this growing problem with football?
I certainly don't know.
I haven't heard them mention it. A lot of people are talking about this, but I have not heard anything from the IHSA. Brian Barnhart has the news headlines at 10:30. Back with more of our Monday morning quarterbacking after that. We're back on our Monday morning quarterback session. Jim Turpin and Lauren Tate here. We go to Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Do you guys think that anybody could have been scared or offended? And I'm not joking about the band playing the pirate music and having the scary flags with the skull.
I don't know. Like, I haven't heard of anybody. I mean, the halftime show was the
They had flags.
Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, yeah.
And if you had ancestors that were pirates, you probably could have been really offended.
Well,
no, I'm not joking.
No, I know you're not.
That was a joke to me. I'm sorry.
I know you weren't joking. That just sounded kind of funny.
I just didn't think that that was the right thing to do right after you got rid of the war chant, to come out. And it's funny to say, but like, when you have this time of like mass shootings and ISIS, and to have those cannons fire off like that, I'm surprised that some of these people who are really politically correct haven't really said something to the University of Illinois about that.
Well, maybe they have. It was just Saturday, you know. They probably have by now. I didn't. Barry Eiser announced that on Friday when I asked him what the band was going to play. He said from the Pirates of the Caribbean, and nobody said anything. I haven't heard anything since that time, but I would not be surprised if somebody was offended by it.
No. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Let's see. Mr. Tate, we were talking during the break there more about this transfer situation. There's already a bunch of athletes that are transferring. I know you've written about that.
I never
a couple of times.
Never knew the numbers really, though. But we've always been guessing at them. It used to be, you know, way back it was 400 was the high number.
I remember you saying, "Well, it's 400 or more transfer every year."
Well, according to the information we received today, 4,360 student athlete basketball players, male basketball players, transferred in the last 6 years. That's unbelievable. Because most of those guys have to sit out a year. Now, some of them, of course, graduates don't have to sit out, but that's a small number. Seniors who have graduated who transfer, I mean, by comparison, it's a small number. But here's a number that tells you everything you want to know. One out of three basketball players who sign scholarships transfer. All across the country. 351 schools, 351, and one-third of them are gone at some point in their career, some point in those 4 years.
That's the most amazing number of them all, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but I kind of knew that. I mean, I kind of, over time, I've been aware that the number was working up.
Sure, just look at your own team at Illinois, and you find that every year, guys.
Yeah, I'm always saying, well, wait a minute, how can the coach offer one more recruit than the players he has? Well, that answer is real simple. He won't have all those players next year. They never do. Somebody will leave. They always do.
So it's 4,000 over a 6 year period.
That's the number. 4,360 over 6 years.
And you were saying, too, in that same article that talked about most of them transfer down.
Yeah, that's right. I think that the thinking is in the public that probably most student athletes are trying to get to a better team. That's not true. Some do, but a lot of guys want one thing, playing time. That's the most important thing. If you're somewhere and you're not getting playing time, you're not going to go up. You're going to go down. And most of the kids that transfer are on the end of your team. They're the last two or three or four players usually. And they're looking for playing time somewhere else. And they're willing to go down to find playing time. Rather play for somebody less than sit on the bench.
I can see how that could get to you. You come here with great expectations. You're a great high school player, an all-stater, and played on all-star teams and all those things. You get here and you never get in the game. And well, there must be some place I can play.
There's 13 players.
Makes perfect sense to me.
No coach is going to, I shouldn't say no coach. Most coaches won't play more than 8 or 9 players. Which means you got 3 or 4 players that are riding the bench most of the time.
We're at 356-9397, or Castle Heating and the Cooling text line is 351-5357. Robert Bates is with the Tolono Fire Department, and hello, Robert. I know you want to say some things about the 9/11 ceremony today.
Yes, the Tohono Fire Department's holding our third annual 9/11 Memorial Blood Drive at the fire station today. I was just hoping to encourage some people to come out, donate blood that will help our local community.
Okay, what time is it going on now?
It will be from 3 p.m. to 6:15 p.m. at the fire station in Tohono at 214 North Bourne.
Okay, are you one of the people that draws the blood? I want to make sure that you got your credentials.
I am not. The blood bank up in Urbana comes down and supplies the people to do it. We just host it.
Just a little joke there. Not much of one, yeah. Robert, but I was trying my best. Okay, that's great that you're doing that, and I wanted to mention, too, that over at the University of Illinois, we're told that the entire quad, just along all the walkways, and there are American flags this morning. That makes me feel pretty good.
Yes, that's always good to see.
Mm. Okay, well, good luck with that, and congratulations to you folks down at Tohono for doing it. Did you say it's your third year doing it?
That's correct. It's our third annual one.
Mm-hmm. All right.
It's our way of giving back, and for people that are looking for a way to give back in remembrance, this is a great way to help, as each blood donation can affect up to 3 lives. So what the blood products are able to make from that.
Okay, well, that's good information. Appreciate it. And Bill Black is on the line. Hi, Bill. How's your concussion?
Well,
I heard that you had one several years ago, and it never quite went away.
Well, I think Speaker Madigan hit me with a gavel, but I don't remember. Hey, I wanted to call. I saw a picture in the News Gazette yesterday, two young guys doing a basketball game. Who were those guys?
Boy, I don't know.
Frickin' frack.
Well, I don't think I've seen Lauren Tate in a suit and tie in quite a while, but
no,
it was a wonderful
right.
picture.
I only got one suit, and I'm saving it for a special occasion.
Well, it was a great picture, and you guys have done a great job for many, many years. And Lauren, I just wanted to comment on your column, two or three weeks ago now, about selling beer at Memorial Stadium, and they will. You're right. I mean, nobody in college athletics is going to miss a chance to make a dollar or two, so you know it's coming. But I had season tickets when the Bears were there.
Well, now that's a different story.
I can tell you, I don't think my wife and I went to every game that was at Memorial Stadium, and we were never sitting there without watching 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 people being thrown out.
I know it, but that's a Bear fandom. That's not the Illinois fandom.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Although, I mean, they're bad. Those guys are really bad.
Yeah, they were. But when I was a student, we had those little, I don't remember what they call those little bags you put wine in. We put beer in them. And it's always been drinking and carrying on and handing people up the rows. And used to throw toilet paper off the balcony, a whole roll, and it would unwind. And we thought that was, well, we were engineers. I thought we were. Look, it'll unwind.
Shame on you. Shame on
yeah,
you.
I know.
Well, I think once Ohio State went the beer route, I think that the Big Ten will follow pretty fast.
I think so. You're not going to miss a chance to make a dollar today. That's what it's all about. And you had a great column about how TV has completely changed the college sports calendar. I remember when every college game was at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
The late and great Paul Chevy, coach at Shalarman and Danville High School, always used to emphasize high school is Friday night. College is Saturday and the pros are Sunday.
That's right.
And I'm thinking, boy, if Coach Chevy could come back today, the pros are Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, around the clock. And now even college games are going to be on Friday night. So it's completely different, but TV runs it, and that's just the
way
it
goes. Did you see that in basketball, Illinois plays every single day of the week, Monday, Tuesday, all the way through Sunday. Every day of the week, at least two games every day, on one of those
games
days.
Are at 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
which it's hard to take your grandchildren, or if they're young, to an 8 o'clock game.
Yeah,
but whatever. It's just,
or your grandfather's Bill.
Yeah,
as our case, yeah.
If I'm not home by 10 o'clock, I may fall asleep.
Hey, good to talk to you, man. I got to move on here.
You guys, and really enjoy the show. And Lauren, you've done a great job for the 10 or 15 years you've been writing columns.
Yeah,
and I hope you
I don't think
up.
It's been that long, has it?
Well, it just seems like it sometimes. Okay, take care.
Thank you, Bill. 10:47, a break here, coming right back. And a text just came in. There was more confirmed concussions in the United States last year in soccer than in football. I'm curious for your opinions on the major D1 sports. Which sport athlete has the least amount of discipline? I personally think basketball. Thank you, says Joe.
Least amount of discipline.
Which sports? I guess he's talking about anybody on any team. There are more people in basketball that have less discipline than on other teams, is what he's talking about. I don't know how you know that.
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, we've had some problems with both.
Oh, you mean off of court discipline?
Well, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Are players that have been removed from their team for various reasons included in the transfer number?
I don't know. I think that what they're doing is just taking all the transfers for every reason, and some of those would be disciplinary.
Yeah.
Some players
I wouldn't see any reason why they wouldn't be included in that number.
Yeah, I'm sure they include everybody.
And Mike is next. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, just real quick on football and concussions and soccer and concussions. I know soccer has taken steps to try and reduce headers. So I think my daughter was, when she was under 12, they were not to head the ball. And if a kid did, then it would result in a free kick for the other team from the spot of the penalty. So they treated it like it was a penalty to head the ball under a certain age. The other thing is there's always probably going to be more concussions in soccer than football because, A, if you've seen youth soccer numbers between youth soccer numbers and youth football numbers, there's a ton more kids playing youth soccer starting at age 5. And also girls play soccer, not just boys. You're doubling the number of chances for a concussion because you got double the number of kids. So I don't think that's an accurate comparison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Would you ever think that they would wear helmets in soccer?
You know, they do actually have some of the older kids will wear, it's not a helmet, it's like a headband that's cushioned so that they can do headers off of it and, you know, reduce the chance for a concussion on it. I know there's a couple of kids that I've seen wear that in some of the games I've seen, but not many. But, yeah, it's already, I think, probably started.
Hey, appreciate your call, Mike. Thank you.
All right.
We'll take our final break right here, coming right back. Want to remind you, if you are in need of collision repairs on your vehicle, Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair is the place to go. It's a full-service collision repair facility. Got two great guys that run that place, Dave Miller and Bill Gallo, guys that are really passionate about what they do. They truly care. That's one of the reasons they put their name on the business, Gallo Miller. Hands-on, too. If you go out there to look for them, ask about them, they say, oh, they're probably back in the shop. Not all owners of collision repair shops are like that, that's for sure. And let me tell you that they work with all insurance companies. I guess maybe some don't, some other companies, but they want to ensure that your vehicle is returned to factory safety specifications, all back with a written lifetime warranty. Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair, they're located I call it centrally in Champaign-Urbana. You can look for their building. It's on the south side of I-74 between the Neal Street and Prospect exits. And Jerry Kill had a minor seizure yesterday morning, but is expected back shortly.
Son of a gun.
And JR said, I could be mistaken, but I could have sworn the stands or whatever you call it, where the chief would really get down and karate chop and kick, got cut. Did anyone notice a difference in the song? No, I don't. I don't know which song he's talking about. I guess the 3-1. You can't really stop concussions from hitting your head on something unless you put the padding between your brain and your skull.
Well, that'd be a little difficult.
That would be. Some people accuse us of having padding up there right now. But that's what happens when you get hit or have car accidents and all that, that it moves. And you wind up with a concussion of some sort. Well, it's been a lot of fun. Good entertainment this morning.
You didn't get to talk about the Cubs.
I did. I said they're sinking here on DWS and Champaign-Urbana.